Paul Wallace is an internationally best-selling author, researcher, and scholar of ancient mythologies. Over the last decade, Paul's work has probed the world's mythologies and ancestral narratives for the insights they hold on our origins as a species and our potential as human beings. As a senior churchman, Paul served as a church doctor, a theological educator, and an archdeacon in the Anglican Church in Australia. Paul's work in church ministry has included training pastors in the interpretation of biblical texts. His work in biblical translation and interpretation has revealed a forgotten layer of ancient story, with far-reaching implications for our understanding of human origins and our place in the cosmos. In this video, Paul sits down with George Nouri, host of Gaia TV's Beyond Belief, to confront the disturbing reality of alien abductions and the way these experiences echo through folklore, history, and biblical texts.
The abduction narrative is global. You can go to any culture in the world and you will hear, at the folkloric level, stories of abduction. So, Scotland, for instance, in the 1600s, Robert Kirk wrote about abductions that were being experienced at that time. So that's disturbing, that's worrying. And you mentioned the Hawaiian narratives of the Mo'o. When I listen to traditional guardians of Hawaiian culture, when they talk about the coming of the Mo'o, what's interesting is they talk about invasion, but not in terms of craft in the sky. They talk about cultural shifts. And they say, if there's been a covert invasion, an annexation, then just watch out for these things. And they talk about separating people from the land to the point where we can't live so independently, so self-sufficient. They talk about an atomization of society where people are polarized and live in competition with each other. They talk about a shift of society where we no longer work for each other. We are all working for superiors, where there's a machinization of how populations are managed. And the stories of the Mo'o say, look out for that, beware of that, but remember the power that we have. We can build our culture from the grassroots up. We don't have to have everything defined by the 1% of the 1%, whether they're ETs or bankers or anyone else.
There was a 17th century Scottish Presbyterian minister named Robert Kirk. What was his involvement in this?
Well, I find Robert Kirk fascinating. He, like me, was a minister and had a great enthusiasm for Bible translation. He was a Presbyterian minister in Aberfoyle, Scotland. This was a very conservative time, the 1600s. Presbyterian church.
Way back,
and Presbyterian was pretty conservative. And they observed his Bible translations, which they said were a bit too open-minded for the Presbyterian church. And what they meant by that was that he went to the root meanings of key words and produced stories that sounded a lot less religious and a bit more mystifying. So that was his white rabbit that led him into the topic of paleo contact in the Bible. But the other aspect was he was a pastor and he listened to the experience of the locals. And he realized that when the locals talked about elves, fauns, fairies, they weren't telling cute bedtime stories. They were telling stories about experiences they and their ancestors had that really worried them.
They were scared.
They were scared about abduction. They were scared about an influence on government that seemed to be non-human. And they spoke about the Sith, who had no compassion towards human beings, but seemed to have this great influence over kings and queens and parliaments. And they didn't like it, they were worried by it. And Robert Kirk was really their champion in making those stories public. And he wrote this book, The Secret Commonwealth, in which he argued that no understanding of the world is complete until we realize there is a non-human layer to the management of Project Earth. And it was a very brave thing that he did, given the period when he was writing.
Paul, you're involved in a film with Matthew LaCroix. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, this is going to be a great year. So Matt and I and a team of researchers will be traveling to Egypt, Turkey, Bolivia, and Peru, and we're probing the information that is recorded in the artifacts of those ancient cultures and in the carvings that they've left behind. And in particular, I'm really interested in what we're going to find in ancient Armenia. And I've come to believe...
Armenia, how come?
Well, so much happened in ancient Armenia. It has one of the world's most ancient languages. So there's information carried by the language itself. It's the place I believe Abraham came from in the Bible, which is quite a controversial thing for me to say, but I argue this in the Invasion of Eden. And if we look at the carved symbology in ancient Armenia, I believe it gives us eyes on what the Elohim of the Bible looked like, what the Anunna of the Sumerian stories looked like. We're in the region of Haldi. So this is Ur of Haldi, the high place of Haldi.
What did they look like?
Some of them looked very much like us, but bigger. Some of them had avian features. Some of them had reptilian features.
Insectoids?
No insectoids that I've spotted to date. But what's interesting about these figures is what they were doing. And it seems when you go to the figure of Haldi, he's doing a number of things. First of all, he's arrived as a colonizer. His name means taken, so he's a conqueror. But when we look at the symbology, it looks like he's rebooting the ecology of the region. It looks like he's providing a cognitive upgrade for the people who live there. And he's doing it in the place associated with our planet's repopulation after the most recent planetary cataclysm.
Are the ET contacts friendly or not?
I think there is always a mix of experience. So if you talk to present experiencers, some people will describe encounters that were harrowing and terrifying, and they don't want to talk about it and they don't want to remember it. But a great many talk about experiences that were elevating, inspiring. And after those experiences, many people have heightened cognitive abilities. They have experiences of precognition. And Robert Kirk, writing in the 1600s, observed exactly the same phenomenon. And so there's a lot of contact happening in the present, just the same as in the past, that suggests a benevolent presence here to support humanity through whatever changes might be down the track.
If you read the Bible and inject ET visitations instead of biblical phrases, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It does. And all you've got to do a lot of the time is leave certain terms untranslated. So if you leave Elohim untranslated, Yahweh untranslated, El Shaddai untranslated, Ruach, Kavod, there are these other key words. And then watch how those words behave in the text. It becomes very clear when you're looking at an invasion, when you're looking at colonization, when you're looking at a human upgrade. And this is when the ancient stories really resurface in the Bible. And I believe the Bible is one of the most rich sources of paleo contact story that we have in the world.
The witnesses saw amazing things, and they put them in the Bible.
Yes, they did. And what they describe is described in other cultural tellings. You can go to Nigeria, you can go to the Zulu people, go to Mesoamerica, go to the Philippines. You will hear the same stories repeat. And it fascinates me because it's not a story that's gone around the world in Chinese whispers. They all have their own language, their own metaphor.
Right.
And it seems to me they all saw the same thing and experienced similar things and found their own way to carry that memory. And it's the overlap that really gets my attention.
Are these biblical stories about benevolent ET contact or some serious invasions?
The whole spectrum is there in the Bible. So on the one hand, you've got the Tseva Hashemayim, the sky armies with all their weaponry. But then you've also got stories of beings like Dagon and Asherah. And Asherah is the Hebrew memory of helpers who came and taught us what plants are good for food, which are good for medicines, which are good to avoid, which are good for higher consciousness. Asherah taught us how to farm and build cities and become a civilization. And so the whole spectrum of experiences is there in the Bible. And the authors guaranteed that that information will never be forgotten.
Sounds like it's a mixed bag.
It's a very mixed bag.
Can people, Paul, influence what's happening behind closed doors with these ET stories, or are they just left on the outside?
That's a great question, because when we look at the secrecy around the program, we can feel very disempowered and think, well, what can I do to define whether it's a great leap forward or an invasion? But what our ancestors say, and you can find this in the Bible as well, is that contact isn't just happening behind closed doors with corporate types and politicians. From the grassroots up, people are having contact experiences all around the world.
Next, we turn to the Gaia Show Open Minds, hosted by Regina Meredith, where she sits down with Paul Wallace and Sean Olaware to explore humanity's deeper origins. Were we purposefully engineered with limitations? How much influence have extraterrestrials had on our development? Are hidden forces still shaping the course of human civilization?
Do you, both of you, do you think there has been some kind of intentional governing factor to limit the expression of humanity into these finer realms of our native being and intelligence? A, has there been a limitation? And B, do we still have active participants doing this at this time, in your opinions?
I'd say yes. Yes, in ancestral memory, and yes, through history. So if we look at the story of human origins, for instance, that comes from the Mayan tradition expressed in the Popol Vuh, the story is told with amazing frankness that there were visitors at one point who wanted a working class. Yes. And they engineered Homo sapiens to, the phrase was, to do the work for us and bring us our food. And so they have a long series of experiments, and this is way back into our animal prehistory. The experiments result in ape-like creatures who live in the forest, it says, and us. But it actually resulted in beings who were far more than they'd intended, far more intelligent, far more conscious, far more beautiful. It was us plus more telepathic connection, better remote viewing, better precognition, better self-healing. And so the engineers in the Popol Vuh story think, well, wait, hang on, we don't need them this clever. Can we dial them down a bit so we can manage? All we want is a workforce, for goodness sake. And so they have an emergency meeting, and they work out the way to dial the humans down is to spray a vapor over human populations that will damage our neurological health and shut off these higher capacities. Limit our vision is the phrase. And just to unpack that, if you think about how is our vision limited? Well, it's limited by surfaces. We can't see behind things. We can't see into things. It's limited by time. We can only see the present. We can't see the past. We can't see the future. It's limited by distance. We can't see beyond the horizon. We can't see into deep space. It's limited by frequency. We can only see this spectrum of radio waves, whereas a dog can see this, a cat can see this. Take all those limits off. All of a sudden, you've got X-ray vision, remote viewing, future viewing. How do you manage and manipulate a being that's that intelligent? And so this was the story. They sprayed a vapor. But there's a positive take home from this story, and that is that they didn't downgrade what we are within ourselves. Mm-hmm. They put something into the environment to dial us down. And the punchline of that story is that absent of that vapor, absent of those toxins in the environment, you and I start becoming healthier, more intelligent, more conscious. That's our natural state. Now, the culture that curated that story about us was the Mayan culture. When the Spanish and the Portuguese went into Central and South America, those were the stories they shut down. along with the shamanic and mystical protocols that existed in those cultures for activating yes. our higher powers. They wanted to delete the information and the knowledge of how to be more conscious and more intelligent and replace it with Christian orthodoxy, which they, the conquerors, would provide through their churches, their education system, so on and so forth. And they created a worldview for those living in Central and South America where you've got God at the top of the pyramid, along with the kings of Portugal and Spain and the Pope. And then you've got the army and the Catholic priests in the middle, and then the people at the bottom praying and obeying. Mm-hmm. And so they've deleted this worldview where we all have interdimensional support and assistance, where we all have higher cognitive powers, and they've replaced it with this feudalizing structure. And in almost every story of colonization, you can see that delete and replace action going on. And I think in a way it still goes on.
Yes, thank you for that. And you just said it, this interdimensionality. They were looking at one, the story of the vapor is looking at one dimension of what it is to be human rather than our multidimensional nature and ability to access those higher realms of consciousness, which were not, I guess they themselves were not yeah. skilled at that and thus didn't understand the nature of or multidimensionality themselves.
So when I traced it even through the Bible itself and mm-hmm. into history subsequently, I'm fascinated by, firstly, I don't believe that the God in the Bible is the God. I put the God on trial. I read a whole book where I put God on trial for crimes against humanity. But one of the things I'm seeing is that these sky beings of various kinds, that when they came here, there's this great story of Babel, the Tower of Babel, where they said, let us confuse their tongues. Now, my hit on this wasn't that everybody spoke a single tongue before Babel and that they confused it, so they're now speaking different languages. My belief system is precisely what you were saying, Paul, is that people had telepathic, clairvoyant, clairsentient, clairaudient capabilities. And what they did was they taught them language. So it's not that they confused the language by telling them, you know, reducing all the languages to one, but that there were telepathic exchanges, clairvoyance, precognition, psychokinesis, all these powers were resident in the creation. And they shut them all off, and now they're going to have to focus on the verbalization of ideas. And as soon as you try to put thoughts into words are very, very leaky vessels. If you look at any piece of artwork, even for 10 seconds, and you try to describe it, it's going to take you a million words to describe what you've just witnessed and taken in. And so words can't do justice to it. So you reduce it down to one language. Now, over time, it's spread into many, many languages. Now, historically, I think what we've done with that then, we realize that every language creates a mindset, which creates a culture, and it articulates in story form, and stories become the archive wisdom of the culture. Now, when the colonialists move in, what do? The first thing is they try to destroy the language. Now, by the beginning of this, of the 20th century, there were 7,000 languages on planet Earth. By the end of that century, there were 5,000 languages left. So there were 7,000 different mindsets, you know, trying to grok the human experience. Now, if you shut down a language, what you're doing is you're shutting down the stories. You shut down the stories, you're shutting down the culture. You shut down the culture, you're shutting down the cosmology. And so you've left people without a cosmology. And now you come in, you say, here's the language, here's the culture, and here's the cosmology. And has to do with our technology, you know, and there's a stratification, as Paul mentioned so beautifully, a hierarchical system, mm-hmm. a secular version of it, and a religious version of it. And now you got the peons at the bottom with no stories to tell, no cosmology, no culture, mm-hmm. no language except that of the colonialists. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we're powerless. And that's been actively, you know, throughout human history,
yes.
it's been actively, including our own times, being promoted.
Now, this is what I mentioned a moment ago, that some of the other offers, my friend Michael Tellinger and others refer to as reducing us to a slave species. Now, when I even say those words, and we're just going to wrap it up on this question, we're almost out of time. How do both of you feel about the notion that humans have been reduced to a slave species?
I'll start to let Paul finish. So I'll tell you a story from my own tradition in Ireland. There's a tradition in Ireland, particularly up into the 1940s and 1950s. I was born in 1946. All fires were turf fires, what you might call peat fires.
Peat, yes.
We call it turf in Ireland.
Yes.
So all fires were turf fires. at night when the family went to bed, the mother would be the last person to go to bed. And she would take the fire, rake it, put all the embers together, and she'd put the dust over the top of it so the embers would stay alive during the night. She would go to bed. She'd be the first one up in the morning. She'd take the embers aside, blow on them, and put new turf in it, and the fire would start right back up. Now, that is what mysticism has had to do in our world. It's like there's been this suppression of the embers of the Holy Spirit, you know? And somehow the mystics of the world have always managed to go underground. And Paul did a beautiful piece in his last book on the Cathars in 13th century Europe. You know, little groups who kept the embers alive. And that's what the mystics have done throughout human history. They're the mothers who put the kinker, the fine ash over the embers at night, you know, while the soldiers are passing by, to take it away in the morning, blow upon it, and rekindle the fire. And there were houses in Ireland in which the fire literally didn't go out for 300 years.
I've read that in other books as well as yours. That's a beautiful metaphor for it. We're going to toss it to you now, Paul, to make your final comments.
All right. I think the story I've just told from the Popol Vuh illustrates it beautifully. I think there was a slavery experience that was part of our story. I think we have experienced colonization in that way in the past. But even within the Popol Vuh, that's not the explanation of who we are. They created something far more able and beautiful when they created us. And when we start reading ancestral stories in the original languages, as Sean was just describing, suddenly we discover that some of our neighbors come because they want to be more like us.
To watch the full interview, available exclusively on Gaia, follow the link in the description or head to our Gaia portal at gaia.com/fifthkind.